Welcome back. A friendly reminder that I'm back here hosting Coast Sunday night into Monday morning. In the first half of the show, Tim Schwartz will join me to discuss the lost journals of Nikola Tesla. When Tesla died in his suite at the New Yorker Hotel in 1943, it wasn't long before the FBI and the Office of Alien Property swept in and scooped up about two truckloads of his papers and journals, some of which likely contain notes pertaining to his work on an anti-gravity device. In the second half of the show, Michael Bodine, the author of Growing Up Psychic, From Skeptic to Believer. That's Sunday night into Monday morning on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, George Norrie is going to be appearing at the 2017 Starworks USA Laughlin UFO Symposium, happening again November 10th to the 12th. At the Aquarius Casino, I believe it's Laughlin or Laughlin, I think it's Laughlin, Nevada, and he'll be hosting the Seeing Red cocktail party, and then he'll be conducting a live interview with Clifford Stone. That's happening on Saturday, November the 11th. Again, that's the Starworks USA Laughlin UFO Symposium at the Aquarius Casino, November 10th to the 12th, and for more information or to register, go to coasttocoastam.com. All right, we are talking about the multiple wave oscillator, George Lakofsky's amazing device. And I should offer a quick medical disclaimer here. We can't here on Coast to Coast make any claims, of course, as to the medical effectiveness of the device. It's not been evaluated or approved by the FDA in the United States or Health Canada up here in Canada. It's offered here for those of you who wish to experiment or conduct your own research. But just why was it suddenly removed from hospitals across Europe and the United States shortly after Lakofsky's death in 1942? Well, perhaps we'll find out the answer to that when my conversation with Dr. Peter Lindemann and Paul Babcock continue right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Paul Babcock and Dr. Peter Lindemann stay with us, and we are discussing the multiple wave oscillator. We should point out up at the coasttocoastam.com website, a lot of links to some websites. We've got Paul Babcock's website is there, Peter Lindemann's website, a link to his site. Also, a link to more information on the multiple wave oscillator, and then also under books and videos by both Paul and Peter. I want to go back to a question before the break, and that is when the device became known. I mean, was it readily available in medical offices, doctors' offices, hospitals in Europe and the United States at one point?
Dr. Lakofsky worked with quite a group of physicians in Europe, France, Germany, Switzerland, Italy. And he had the hospital selected out, and so there was a group of doctors in Europe who were doing very good clinical research, and many of them were using the oscillator on what they considered hopeless cases. And over a period of years, they developed tremendous amounts of data, good clinical data. And, you know, you have to understand the age. In the 1850s, 1860s, there's a whole bunch of brilliant men and women born who were going to transform the 20th century. And I call them the 20th century prophets. There was Rife, Reich, Lakofsky, Tesla. And at the turn of the 20th century, it was a bright new world. And they had and there was all these great minds. They were creating all this new technology. And they were, you know, creating energy devices and medical, you know, the oscillator. Tesla was doing medical research. Royal Raymond Rife. These guys were literally going to transform our world. And then suddenly in the 1930s, they were literally all shoved to the side, suppressed. Reich died in prison. Rife was... he died. They basically said your technology is not going to go anywhere. The AMA shut him down, and Tesla wound up impoverished, living in a hotel. All these guys that were going to completely transform the 20th century, completely transform our belief system, were all rubbed right out. Their work was suppressed. They all died in poverty or in prison. And it's, to me, one of the greatest tragedies of the 20th century. We'd be completely living in a different world if that hadn't happened.
But it didn't happen right away for Lakovsky. I mean, his device was still out there and being used up until he died, wasn't it, Peter?
Well, it was, but again, he was its primary advocate. And so, for instance, in as Paul just said, when he was in Europe, many of the associate doctors, he was not a medical doctor, okay? He was a researcher and he was an engineer. But many of the medical doctors he was working with were in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Italy. And when World War II started, he was in Free France, and Germany, Austria, and Italy were all on the other side of the war. And so as soon as World War II erupted, he got cut off from interacting with his main collaborators. And eventually he had to, he was very vocal about being an anti-Nazi. And so when the Germans invaded France, he left and came to America. Now in America, he didn't have anywhere near the, the clinical base of success and record that he had in Europe over the last 10 years. And so when he died in 1942, his son, Sergei, came with him, and they did continue research in U.S. hospitals for another maybe 15 years. But again, it was just, one here, one there, because the big news after World War II in medicine was antibiotics. Antibiotics all of a sudden could do something, and that this is what got all the press, this is what got all the attention, this is what got all the money. And so this device was operating, they were operating just on the edge of medical acceptability. And now today it's been completely, you can't take one of these things into a medical facility and ask them to use it. Only very, very far-seeing practitioners, and practitioners not afraid of using alternate means, are going to be using these sorts of things.
Right.
So, because as Paul said, the general attitude towards these things was very repressive.
So when Lakovsky is struck by this limousine, and then I guess he died a while after that from pneumonia.
Well, no, he died of complications from the accident. I think he died about a week after the accident.
Okay, it was a week. Okay,
yeah.
Then what happened to these machines? Did they just fall into disrepair? Were they carted down into the basement and forgotten?
Well, I'm sure that happened to some of them. There weren't a lot of machines in the United States. Sergei, his son, actually, working with a number of doctors, actually built more devices in the United States after George Lakovsky died than before he died. There are reports, small historical accounts written by his son Sergei, who claim that over 150 machines were built. But again, this is just a drop in the bucket, in relationship to specific clinics or other things like that. And again, they were doing research. These devices weren't just dropped into a clinic and allowed to be used, for anything, okay? And that isn't what they were trying to do. They were still trying to figure out all the things it could do, all the things it couldn't do, and they were looking at it in a medical model, so which was, quasi-legal. So it was, they never became generally available, ever, anywhere, although they were, hundreds and hundreds of them were used eventually all over the world after the war in the late 40s and early 50s. But after Lukovsky died and after Sergei went back to France, the whole network of people using these things just sort of, you know, slowly just fell apart.
And so for a time, the technology was basically forgotten, correct?
Yeah, I would say pretty much through the late 1950s into the early 1960s. It was definitely falling into just falling through the cracks of history, really. An article was published in an obscure alternative energy magazine called The Round Robin, which was the newsletter of the Borderland Sciences Research Foundation in California, in 1963 by a doctor, Robert C. Beck. And that created a new firestorm of interest. And so there were little revivals, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s, and so on. But it wasn't really until 2009 when two engineers in Europe, one of them in Belgium, and one of them in Italy, actually tracked down one of Lukovsky's original machines built in Paris by his company called Colissa. And they back-engineered it. They were both radio engineers. They back-engineered it and published a book on exactly what it was and how it worked. So for the first time, in 2009 was the very first time that the public had access to what the circuits really were and how the system actually worked.
Paul, how did you find out about the Lukovsky device, and then talk to me about how you came to build your first one?
Well, the first time I heard about Lukovsky was I was reading a Bruce Cathy book about 20 years ago, and it took me a long time to remember that exactly where I did it. But at the Science and Energy Conference in 2016, a dear friend of mine, Jim Murray, his brother was dying a bad form of cancer, and Peter and I also had a mutual friend who was also dying of cancer. And so Jim at the conference asked the late John Bedini and Peter if there was something that could be done, because John was the expert on rice, and it was suggested a Lukovsky machine. So, and Peter happened to know where there was one on the East Coast that could be acquired, so Jim had it sent out to his brothers, and it was an hour late and a dollar short. His brother passed away just a few days after the machine arrived, and there it was sitting in California. So here we had another friend named Dave Squires, who was just an incredible inventor, incredible mind, beautiful human being. And so we had a friend in California ship that machine up. And, of course, it was an hour late and a dollar short again, and Dave passed away. So I wound up with this machine, and it was just one of those synchronous events. And I just got hooked. I started researching the technology, and then I had it. And this is, and my wife, being the volunteer, she's totally into this stuff. And so she volunteered as a test subject, and we set it up and we started using it. We both immediately noticed biological effects. And positive effects. I just noticed my metabolism jumped, and suddenly I didn't have diverticulitis, and I just started understanding the science of it, and it started this process. I've had 40 years of researching Reich and Rife and Tesla, the electrical nature of the earth, and it was a catalyst that brought it all together over this year period. And so it turned out about 3 months went by, I was just totally stoked, and so was my wife, and we were just excited about it. And then I realized, we really have to send it back to the person that owns it. And my wife said, "What do you mean you're going to send the machine back?" I said, "Yeah, well, says, guess what? You're going to build me one through the winter, because we got to have one of these things."
Guess what? You've got a new project.
Yeah, I got my marching orders for last winter, so I spent all winter in the lab building this thing, and of course the two radio engineers from Europe did such a great job of writing the book. I had great reference material to produce an exact Lakovsky machine. So the trick was to build one that wasn't, cost prohibitive, so I decided to build it out of Home Depot, and basically that's what I did. I ground scrap copper, and I bought my parts out of Home Depot, and I built my spark gaps, and I spent the winter in the lab, and I started about November and March. I had it done, and of course Peter, and to make a long story short, when Peter went to send his machine back to the lady who owned it, she actually gave it to Peter. So Peter wound up with a machine, and then we had ours we built, and so we could do comparison testing and everything. And that's when the heavy-duty experimentation really began. And what I've learned from this thing is just an amazing thing. There's way more to it than meets the eye. And it's and I can testify to the effects because, it's an amazing thing, and that's how it all evolved, and that's the story. And so now I've really realized that these synchronous events are meant for a purpose, and the world needs to know this stuff in the worst way. It's really uncovered in a science about biology. And all these great men of the 20th century were trying to teach us this, and now it's time to learn it. There's been a 50, 60, 70-year period of what I call the Dark Ages. And it's time to escape the Dark Ages. We really need to understand biology, the way it really works. And I can testify that in the doctor world, in the medical world, there's a silent rebellion going on. And in the last year, I've been contacted and found many, many medical people that are just really realizing the shortcomings of allopathic medicine, and they're starting to research this stuff. And some doctors are using the Lakovsky. They've gone to third world countries where they can work, where people really need it, and where they can be unmolested and unharassed, and they're really doing clinical research. And it's astounding. I don't want to tip their hand and tell them where they're at or who they are. And I know people on the East Coast, there's numerous doctors in rebellion that are embracing this stuff, trying different devices, getting tremendous results. And it's a silent revolution, and it's about time.
Peter, are there any current clinical studies being conducted with the Lakovsky machine? And is there any hope that at some point in the future, and we're coming up on a break, so just a quick reply, is there any a possibility we'll see FDA approval for this device?
Well, let me just take the first question first. Are there clinical trials going on? Probably, but I don't know where, okay? Because the book came out in 2009, and it's a digital download, which means basically anybody can buy it and have it in their computer in about 10 minutes. And they've been selling it now for 8 years. So the probability is that there are thousands and thousands of people who now know how to build this thing. And so are there clinical studies going on? Probably. Okay, but I don't know where. Okay, and I don't know whether they'll ever be published.
All right, we'll leave the second part of the question till after the break. Peter Lindemann, Paul Babcock, stay put. Back with more on the Lakovsky device. Here's ELO taking us into the break with Last Train to London on Coast to Coast AM. I was Googling, you want to find a new artist that sounds like somebody else, and you're not sure who to Google. So I Googled, who sounds like Janis Joplin? And this was the name that came up, Beth Hart. And I have to admit, I didn't know about Beth Hart until I heard this song. And it's an old Tom Waits song, Chocolate Jesus. Well, I love Jesus, and I love chocolate. I got to tell you what, Beth Hart does a fine job. I got to tell you about this story. There was a family visiting an infamous haunted hotel in Colorado. You probably know it. It's, of course, the location for the Stephen King's legendary book and the movie The Shining, the Stanley Hotel. Anyway, this family's there, and they suspect they may have photographed the ghost of a little girl standing atop a staircase. And the eerie image was taken during a spirit tour, again, at the legendary Stanley Hotel. You can check out the rest of the story and the photo up at the coasttocoastam.com website, where webmaster Greg Bishop has posted it in the carousel. If you like what you're hearing tonight, this morning, I want to cordially invite you to check out my weekly syndicated radio program. It's called The Conspiracy Show. It airs Sunday nights at 11 p.m. Eastern out of Toronto on a 50,000-watt clear channel. It's called Zoomer Radio, AM 740. You can pick that signal up through much of the eastern United States after dark, Maine to Minnesota, south to the Carolinas, and we also have about 35 affiliates across North America. For more information, visit my website, strangeplanet.ca. We also live stream on YouTube. Most Sundays, the YouTube channel is The Conspiracy Show with Richard Serrett. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button and say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. Back with more of my conversation with Dr. Peter Lindemann and Paul Babcock on the multiple wave oscillator right here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Lindemann, in your estimation, will we ever receive or will we ever see FDA approval for the Lakovsky device, I ask rhetorically?
Well, it's certainly not going to happen spontaneously. Food and Drug Administration certification is a very expensive process, and usually it needs to be paid for by, some big corporation. I mean, it costs tens of millions of dollars to get even a single drug through the process for a single use. So the idea that the FDA is at some point going to approve of this as a medical device, for even one use, hangnails or something, I think is remote. When you see what this can do for health enhancement as opposed to disease mitigation, then you see that its action is so broad and so positive in so many ways that to try and get it, squeeze it through the medical model hole in the wall that the FDA creates, I think is the wrong way of getting these things into circulation. I think it's completely legal for anybody to use an electronic device in the privacy of their own home, and as long as these things are being sold as an electronic device, anybody can use them. So we're not waiting for somebody to approve of it. I don't think that's the right way to go.
So just to clarify, because there are websites that are advertising, these are for sale. They're legal to buy, they're legal to ship across state lines, they're legal to use. Are there any caveats? Are there any things? I mean, it's entirely innocuous in terms of, it can do no harm is what I'm trying to say, correct? It can do no harm.
It can do no harm in the same way that your kitchen stove can do no harm. In other words, if you put your hand on the burner, you're going to find out that isn't the smartest thing to do. And if you run the multiple wave oscillator when it's, oscillating at 500,000 volts, like Paul's can, and a big, Great Dane walks in the room and puts his nose next to it and gets, nailed by a spark, he's going to run around the house and break things and all sorts of things. So to say that it's risk-free is, I think, also a stretch. But the point is that it's easy to use the device once you understand what it is, what it's doing, and what the risks are in association with it. I think it's very safe to use. But that, again, I can't claim that it's safe for anybody in particular. I mean, McDonald's found that serving coffee, at 180 degrees wasn't safe for all people, and they got sued, for people who spilled it and got burned in their car. So I'm just saying that, responsible, self-responsible people are not going to assume that the machine is automatically safe in every condition and therefore look for somebody to blame if they use it without an understanding of the protocol for use.
Right,
And they hurt themselves.
Paul, is it difficult to build? And you built yours courtesy of Home Depot and some scrap copper. I mean, how much does it cost to build? How many hours? And is it difficult?
It's actually not that difficult at all. It's, you know, the
geniuses like you. I'm just going to put that in.
Well, you know, I have kind of a skill set that tends toward that, but I didn't have any problem building it. And I used lumber, and you know, I used pine boards, and sewer pipe and different things to produce it. Electrically, it is exactly like Lakowski, and that was my thing. The European versions and Lakowski, they did beautiful machines with just incredible machining and a lot of expense to build them. You know, very clinical versions. I wanted to build one that was in the common realm, and you didn't have to drop $20,000 to get the sheet metal work done and the machining and all the other stuff. So I built mine for about $800, most of it out of Home Depot. And so it's not, if anybody with some tool skills can build one. I highly recommend having some electrical skills along the way, because playing with 15,000, on the outside, the Lakowski is very safe. On the inside, you have 15,000 volt neon light transformers, which can be deadly. So, you know, it takes some common sense anytime you play with electricity. That's my recommendation. If you don't know about electricity, find somebody who does and work with that person, and you should be able to build one just fine.
Can you imagine, or let's try to imagine, if one of these Lakowski devices found its way, maybe not into every house across North America, but let's say within in every community there was a couple of thousand of them. How disruptive would that be?
Now you're thinking. Because I have this dream, and Peter and I have talked this about it quite a bit. Every neighborhood needs machines. I have all kinds of designs and things I've been working on where you could put one in your backyard and create a field around your whole property. It was kind of Lakowski's vision too, is to create localized fields where this electrical background radiation is enhanced by the machine, and you just live in it. You're exposed to it all the time. I have this other dream, you know, my wife and I talk about all the time about starting what we want to call the Electric Prayer Society, where people volunteer, create these machines, people feel the need for them. I'm not saying throw your doctor away and do something else, but do it in parallel. If you have a disease or a condition you're dealing with, do it in parallel to what your doctor is doing. And it, you know, if it can't do you any harm if it's properly used, what have you got to lose? Not to mention, you know, I'm thinking about children. And if, say, you started out where you were exposed to this thing, where you actually got to do it young in life, and you did it your whole life, you might never be sick. You might live to tremendous old ages by keeping your cellular function optimal all the time throughout your life. There's just tremendous things that could be done with this. You know, I mean, it's... just let your imagination go wild.
Peter, what do you think the implications were this to go mainstream, go viral?
Well, I think the cost of healthcare in this country or wherever that happened would plummet, and the use of surgeries and prescription drugs would drop, you know, tremendously. And I think that's the big problem, that it alters the economics of healthcare, because what the Lakowski machine does is actually provide you with enhanced health, as opposed to disease mitigation, and it does so without a specific premium every month that goes to somebody else who isn't actually, you know, some insurance company that isn't actually providing you more health. They're just providing you a risk pool that will pay for something when something goes wrong, whereas sitting in a Lakovsky device and the field effects produced by it actually promote your health in a very active way. And so it would be part of a huge paradigm shift where we do things that make ourselves healthier on a regular basis rather than things that only make ourselves sicker, and that the absence of disease is considered health rather than, you know, pushing cell function to its natural maximum, and experiencing, youthing effects, in middle age.
Can it cause any sort of interference with other frequencies, radio frequencies, microwave frequencies, cell phone example, for example?
Yeah, I can't run my unit here in the basement. I've got my computer modem and my router right within about 7 or 8 feet of where I have the MWO set up. And I have to turn those things off and disconnect the wires when I use the machine. It gets into those things. The electrostatic, the oscillating electrostatic field at high frequency is just something that these very sensitive electronics are not shielded for. And so you have to recognize that some of the signals that the machine produces are very, very penetrative, when it relates to your biology, that's wonderful. But when it relates to sensitive low voltage semiconductor devices like advanced electronics, that's potentially dangerous to their condition as well.
So Lakovsky's dream of, let's say, for example, having these devices scattered around like cell phone towers, that can never happen because, we are so dependent on wireless transmission for so many other things, and this would just wreak havoc on that system.
Yeah, I've actually done some experimenting in that, and at the power levels the machine runs at, I found that if my devices are 10 to 15 feet away, I don't have any problems at all. Now, I've watched many of people walk up and try to take pictures of it with their cell phones, and their cell phone dies. They get about 5 feet within the...
Sorry, I'm laughing in the background. Yeah, that's the point. There's some sort of risk boundary in relationship to sensitive electronics around these things, and we don't know exactly what that is, but it's there.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you about how the Lakovsky device works that you think is important to mention?
Yeah, I would like to talk about some of my observations with the electrical nature of the Earth, the ionospheric charge, and my machine. When the weather changes, when I get heavy-duty rainstorms come over the house, the machine picks up energy, and it's very affected by solar flares, storm clouds, and the weather in general, and it's just living proof that you're literally tying yourself to the electrical nature of the Earth. And when I disconnect it from the Earth ground, suddenly it goes to a much more tame machine and you don't notice those effects so much. But when I tie it to the earth ground and I'm in a very good spot, very conductive, I sit on top of a granite rock that's very quartz heavy, and so I'm kind of up on a point in the air, and I find it's never ceases to amaze me, the weather changes. Like last August, for most of the summer, it'd been pretty tame. And then all of a sudden, one day, the wife and I went up to use the machine, and it was like literally throwing sparks across the rings, and it was heavily powered, and I checked it out. Everything was the same and correct. And I was astounded at what I was seeing. And I went back and I started doing some research. Well, it turned out that the Earth was being hit by heavy solar flares, and people were in the high summertime were seeing aurora borealis clear down to the Midwest United States in the middle of the summer, which is very odd. And the machine reacted completely with those solar flares up and down, and I could track it. And I found that it just absolutely blew my mind to see how interactive this machine is with the electrical nature of the Earth.
Peter, is there something that I haven't asked you about how this device works that you think is important?
Well, I agree with everything that Paul has said. That and I think the most important thing about these machines is the subtler biology, the electrobiology of using them. In other words, we live in a way that we are embedded in this electrical biological field, and when you build one of these machines and operate it in the mode that Lukoski discovered, what you find is that your embeddedness in the biological electrical field of the Earth becomes enhanced, and I think this is and it functions then as a teaching tool. And it shows you your embeddedness in ways that you didn't see before. And so I think its use as an educational tool to draw us into a deeper understanding of our relationship with the larger environment is one of its great gifts.
Fascinating. Well, this is usually about the time on the show I go off in a bit of a put myself out there on a ledge, I guess. And let me throw this out there. We're coming up on a break, but we'll think about this for a moment, maybe talk about it when we come back. And we'll also open up the phone lines at the top of the hour and invite questions and comments from our Coast listeners. But when I'm listening to you and a lot of the things that you're talking about sounds like maybe... Here's the out on a limb part, that this is maybe sort of the same sort of technology that was at work with the Ark of the Covenant. Do I hear crickets?
Well, the Ark of the Covenant was clearly a very, very large capacitor. It was a gold-covered wooden box. It had gold on the outside and gold on the inside. And they've rebuilt these things. And on a dry day in the sun, the Ark of the Covenant would charge up to well over 1,000,000 volts and discharge across the wings, across, on the top surface. So, it's exactly right that when you build these sorts of structures, you can very easily get into aspects of the behavior of the natural world that you didn't know were there.
There you go. I'm not so crazy after all. Thank you for confirming that, Peter. All right, Paolo Nutini takes us into the break with Coming Up Easy, and also your questions and comments for Paul Babcock, Dr. Peter Lindemann on the Lukoski device when Coast to Coast continues right after this.